Morning, everybody. I'd like to call the Senate Finance Committee to order. 7 minutes after 9 a.m., February 23rd, 2009. Joining me today is my co-chair, Senator Hoffman, Senator Ellis, and Senator Thomas. There's overlap with a couple other meetings, so we'll be joined shortly by other members of the committee. Today, we have three bills on the agenda. We're going to start with Senate Bill 115, Rural Energy Assistance Program. Then we're going to do Senate Bill 116, Appropriations, Rural Energy Assistance. And then we're going to do Senate Bill 93, Municipal Air Quality Property Tax Credits. The intent is to hear these bills today, take public testimony, and then we'll be setting all three bills aside while we review them after taking public testimony and having some information brought to the committee on them. So we'll go ahead and start with the first bill today, Senate Bill 115, Rural Energy Assistance Program. And here to present the bill is my co-chair, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll have my aide give a presentation on both of these pieces of legislation. If we could have Mr. Jay Livey come to the table.
Mr. Livey, if you could, even though you've been here many times, if you could introduce yourself for the record, and I guess who you work for.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jay Livey, working with Senator Hoffman. My comments this morning, Mr. Chairman, I think will be toward both 115 and 116, if that's okay, because the two bills do work a little bit together.
It might be easier if we stick to the subject at hand, and then when we get to the second bill, you can kind of wrap them in, possibly.
Okay.
Otherwise, we're talking about a bill we haven't even heard yet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate Bill 115 temporarily establishes the Rural Community Energy Assistance Program. The idea is that this piece of legislation is to provide temporary relief to residents of Alaska who are struggling to pay their heating costs this winter. We know, Mr. Chairman, that most residents of rural Alaska heat their homes with fuel oil. The price of this oil, we know, has increased over the past several years as the price of oil has increased. Even though the price of a barrel of oil has, as we all know, has significantly decreased over the past year or so, this has not necessarily been the case in rural Alaska. Because of the nature of how villages out there receive fuel, what we find is that much of the fuel was delivered earlier this year prior to the significant fall we have in fuel oil prices. So the current price for heating fuel does not necessarily reflect what we've seen as a recent drop in crude prices. Also, Mr. Chairman, it does not appear that there's an absence of fuel in rural Alaska, except in a few isolated instances. Most of the fuel stocks in most villages are adequate for people to purchase the fuel. There is fuel there to purchase. A few villages had ice come early and have had to fly fuel in, but that's not significantly the problem everywhere. However, the problem we do have in villages in rural Alaska is for many individuals, there's a lack of income in which to purchase both fuel, electricity, and other necessities. As the price of fuel, we know, Mr. Chairman, the price of fuel hasn't continued to increase. And in your packets, we included a November of this year publication by the Division of Community and Regional Affairs, which is their spot check on the price of fuel. And they go around and check on fuel prices in 100 Alaska communities. And you can see in there that there are, out of that 100 communities, there are 27 communities in that group that pay more than $7 per gallon for heating fuel.
Just stop there for a minute. We've been joined by Senator Olson and Senator Elton, and we're on Senate Bill 115, just starting the presentation. And Senator Huggins is on the way. Go ahead and continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now we can put that $7 a gallon a little bit into perspective. Because if we assume that a person burns 800 gallons of fuel a year, which is really a fairly conservative number, at $7 a gallon, they're spending about $5,600 a year only to heat their home. In 2007, to put that in perspective, in 2007, ISA reported the average income, per capita income, for someone in the Wade Hampton census unit, which is the one that includes many of the small villages around Bethel, that the per capita income was about $16,000. Consequently, Mr. Chairman, over 35% of an average individual's income can be used for fuel. That's a very, very high percentage of your income to heat your home. We also know, Mr. Chairman, that there are other factors in rural Alaska, other costs that are contributing factors. In the ISA report of 2007, it noted that fuel costs in Bethel, this is not the village, but in Bethel, were 92% higher than in Anchorage. And again, this ISA report we've included in your packet so that you can look at both the fuel costs as well as the food costs. We did look at several other distribute money. There's a bulk fuel loan program. There's a bridge fuel loan program. There's the governor's emergency fuel program. Those programs are all designed primarily to purchase fuel on behalf of communities when there's a shortage. They provide loans to communities. They provide ways for communities to recoup money for fuel, to purchase more fuel. And this is not what we think is the case in this instance. We think there's enough fuel, Mr. Chairman. The problem is that people can't afford to buy it. Mr. Chairman, these pieces of legislation are not intended to fix the income problems in rural Alaska. They're not necessarily intended even to deal in the long term with the fuel issue in rural Alaska. We have other means to do that. What we want to do in this case, Mr. Chairman, is provide people with a way of getting through the rest of the heating season and providing a one-time benefit to individuals so that they can continue to heat their homes until the winter is over. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So this act would be repealed on June 30th, 2010?
Correct.
1 year?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
And then could you explain a little bit about on line 12, where it talks about the department shall adopt regulations, what are you expecting out of the department? Senator Hoffman?
Mr. Chairman, we are looking at ways to change the legislation so that we do not have to go through the regulatory process, because we're trying to get cash out immediately, and between now and the next hearing, hopefully we'll have language to accomplish that.
So the intent here is to get some immediate relief this winter.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
We have other initial questions from the committee. We have also been joined by Senator Huggins. Okay. What we'll do is we're also waiting for the fiscal note from DCCED, and it's not quite ready yet. So by the time we get the added language, we'll probably have the fiscal note. We've got some folks online, so we'll go to Anchorage. Reagan Mattingly. And if you could state who you represent, who you are, who you represent, and speak to Senate Bill 115, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Reagan Mattingly from Anchorage. I'm the State Affairs Coordinator for the Alaska Primary Care Association. And the Primary Care Association supports Senate Bill 115. And the Primary Care Association represents 26 community health center organizations, which operate 141 clinics across the state. Our clinic directors across the state have increasingly reported that revenues intended for patient services are being crowded out and redirected to cover the high energy costs at their facilities. So as more and more dollars are redirected to cover energy costs, there's growing concern that patient access could be affected. So the APCA is requesting that nonprofit community health center organizations and other primary care safety net providers, as well as local tribal community health center organizations, be considered as eligible for assistance under this grant program to communities. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Do we have a Pat Luby?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Pat Luby. I'm the advocacy director for AARP in Alaska.
And if you can identify yourself, please.
Pat Luby, I'm the advocacy director for AARP in Alaska.
Yes, and go ahead and speak to Senate Bill 115, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. AARP strongly supports Senate Bill 115. As you know, and many of the younger people have had to leave some of our rural communities, and what we often have is a community that's dominated by older people and children. These are the folks who are most susceptible to hyperthermia. Older people, as we age, we're not as sensitive to temperature changes. And what we found through some of the research that's been done by the National Institute on Aging is that many of our older citizens think that they can cope with colder weather the way they used to when they were younger, and actually just the opposite is true. And anything that we can do to help provide heating assistance for these folks who are living out in rural Alaska, we certainly support and we encourage you and your committee to support it also. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. That concludes the list of our call-ins on, excuse me, we've got one more coming. Tom LaCoche, if you can please identify yourself and who you represent and speak to Senate Bill 115, please.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. This is Tom Lockish. I'm in Anchorage, Alaska. I'm just representing myself. And although I definitely sympathize with the philosophy of helping individuals in need for a subsidy for maintaining their health and safety in rural communities, I don't think this bill addresses it, and indeed directly conflicts with the testimony of Mr. Leiby about the need. The bill talks about supplying energy subsidy for communities rather than individuals in need, and I would request that the committee amend it to specifically cite that the intent is to provide subsidy to either individuals and or organizations in direct need of subsidy rather than a wholesale subsidy of communities. As we found out with the resource rebate last year, we essentially put ourselves in a hole by using a nuclear device to swat flies, and I would hope that the committee would reconsider to amend the bill to be consistent with the intent of Mr. Leiby's testimony to subsidize individuals in need of subsidy rather than communities as a whole, where that could be better addressed in bills that are presently in consideration in the Senate regarding renewable energy subsidies. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Senator Thomas, did you have a question?
Not a question, more or less a comment. I believe that that's what we're waiting for. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe that's what we're waiting for from the Community and Regional Affairs is some way that there's a dispersion of the funds that are allowed here into the community, and they use the word community, but we're talking about the individual populace within those communities, how that money would be distributed in, on a general basis, and that's, I believe, what we're waiting for and expecting shortly from them. So, thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, and we'll go on now to Dillingham. Melody Nybeck. Ms. Nybeck, if you can identify yourself and who you represent and speak to Senate Bill 115.
Sure. Good morning, Mr. Co-Chair and Senate Finance Committee members. For the record, my name is Melody Nybeck, and I am testifying today on behalf of the Bristol Bay Native Association at the request of our CEO, Ralph Anderson. He is out of town today and is not able to be here this morning to testify. I'm the newly hired Tribal Energy Program Manager for BB&A, and for that reason, also present today at the Dillingham LIO is Norm Anderson, an Economic Development Specialist for BB&A and a commercial fisherman. Testimony will be brief this morning. BB&A strongly supports Senate Bill 115 and Senate Bill 116, and we thank the committee and staff for introducing these two bills. In short, the communities of Bristol Bay are no different than the other bush communities throughout Alaska. We, too, are facing a very high fuel price, which impacts our electric, gas, and food bills. And despite our best efforts to conserve and make our homes more energy efficient, there are many families in the region who are facing the same hardships you are reading about and seeing in the news. The choice between paying their fuel bill, or as the sponsor statement says so perfectly, paying for the other necessities of life. In Dillingham, at present, we pay a base rate of $6.10 per gallon for heating fuel. That's the average of the two distributors in the community. And as best as I'm able to interpolate with the Cooperative Extension Service Food Cost Survey, Dillingham is 2.2 points or 220% above the family of four weekly food costs as a percentage to acreage. And those are figures as of September of 2008. Similar to Bethel, it also stands to reason that the small villages outside of Dillingham are even more expensive. BB&A also recognizes that Senate Bill 115 and Senate Bill 116 are not the solution to the high cost of energy in rural Alaska, but rather provide a one-time assistance. We thank you for that possible one-time assistance and in return pledge to be an active part of finding a long-term solution. Also, as a point of information, the Bristol Bay region has one first-class city, 12 second-class cities, and 18 unincorporated communities as per defined by the Division of Community and Regional Affairs. But despite our incorporation classifications, we are all facing high fuel prices, and I hope this bit of information moves forward with the bills as a reference point when defining a rural community. As I said, my testimony will be short, so thank you, Mr. Co-Chairs and Senate Finance Committee members, for your time and consideration. BB&A stands ready to support the committee and its efforts to move this legislation forward. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Also in Dillingham, I think from the same organization, Norm Anderson. Mr. Anderson, if you want to identify yourself and who you represent, and if you have anything new to add, please speak to Senate Bill 115. Is Mr. Anderson still online? Okay, we'll go on then.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, Mr. Anderson?
Yes, excuse me, sorry, we had a problem here. I am Norman Anderson with the Bristol Bay Native Association. I am the Economic Development Program Manager. I work with the 31 communities in the Bristol Bay region, and the last 2 years we have seen an incline in the amount of assistance that definitely has been needed, and that is directly related to problems associated with our economy that we see. We see a low price of salmon in our region, capacity processing problems. Our people in the villages are our proud people and rarely do need to ask for assistance in that. We have done everything we possibly can to be able to sustain, but with the price of fuel as high as it has been the last few years, it's becoming more and more difficult for people to make ends meet. So speaking for all of the villages in the region, it's those villages that are nearer to the hub have the opportunity to find jobs and to do things, and that is one of the bonuses of micropolitan areas. But people who are further from that have got the problems of with low employment opportunities Coupled with that comes the lack of opportunity for income. And so speaking for all the villages, we would like to see something happen, and we see that this could be a little bit brighter light at the end of the tunnel. So thank you very much for the opportunity. Have a good day.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. We're now going to go to Myron Manning.
Hello.
Yes, if you can identify yourself, Myron, and who you represent, and speak to Senate Bill 115, please.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Finance Committee. My name is Myron Manning, president of the Association of Village Council Presidents, representing 56 villages on the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta region. We support Senate Bill 115 because one of the things that's going on in our region is that the fuel prices range between $6 to $11 per gallon. Most of those villages, like you have seen in the news, like Imangak, range about $11 per gallon because the fuel had to be flown in, and the fuel was not delivered to the village in time before freeze-up. But still, for those villages that received their fuel on the regular scheduled barges, $6 per gallon plus is a very high amount of money to pay, especially for many of our people in the villages who have now tried to pull together their whatever limited resource that they have to pay for heating fuel and gasoline in order to gather wood or gather subsistence resources. You know, if you compare the prices of some items that are being paid in villages, here in Bethel, we pay for $10 per gallon for a gallon of milk. Out in the villages, it's between $12 to $13 per gallon for the same gallon of milk that we can get here in Bethel. A package of wieners, or the franks that they call them, is $6 for a package. So you can see the choices that our people are having to make between fuel and food. The one-time assistance that's going to be provided by Senate Bill 115 is something that our people will really appreciate and be thankful for because of the hardships that we've had throughout the winter. Our association have had to help many families in the region with the low-income home energy assistance, but that is never enough to support our people to meet the needs of the families in the villages. This past year, we've provided over 1,800 low-income home assistance payments to families, but that was not enough to buy the fuel to last through the winter, and we still got about another three more months of winter before it finally got warm, or before it finally gets warm. On the side note, you know, the state of Alaska is also the manager of the fisheries resources in Western Alaska. Our people in the region have lost their economic base, the commercial fisheries that have occurred over the years that helped, at one time used to help defray some of these costs. And I think that if the fisheries were managed well, some of this would not be happening today. Some of the people would have been able to carry through till summertime, but because of what happened last summer, both on the Yukon and the Kuskokwim Rivers, our people are bearing the burden of trying to provide for their families, at the same time providing the burden of conservation so that we can have these resources in the future that will allow us to be able to meet the heating needs of our homes and other things that are needed within our communities. With that, Association of Village Council Presidents strongly support Senate Bill 115 because it's going to make a big difference for many of our people in the villages. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you for your testimony today. That concludes the online. I have no sign-up sheet for in the room. Do we have any other questions for the bill sponsor before we final wrap up by the bill sponsor? Senator Hoffman, one thing I would like you to address for those people that intermittently tune into our proceedings here, the issue with the fuel delivery that you're struggling with in your Western Alaska versus other non-iced ports.
Well, this particular piece of legislation is just to get us through this next winter. There is, as people have testified, a real need to look at a long-term solution. I know that we've introduced legislation that passed the Senate and the Senate last year that capped fuel at $3. That might not be the ideal solution, and we could still continue to work on that problem. But I think that this particular piece of legislation, hopefully we can fine-tune it and have the legislation implemented. My office has been working directly with the people on the third floor to get this legislation as broad as possible so that it can be utilized throughout the state of Alaska and not just specifically for the people in the YK Delta. And hopefully we can come up with the language between now and the next time that this bill is heard so that we do not have to go through the adoption of regulations, which is very, very time consuming.
And then could you remind me, if you could, how far down the iced-in ports are affected coming down the coast? I know in Southeast we have no iced-in ports.
Well, it goes all the way down past Dillingham. Dillingham is the largest community. The delivery schedule, I think, is the problem. Many of the communities did not even get fuel and had to have them flown in. But I would say below Naknek, you would start seeing some ice-free ports.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the bill being before us for our consideration. I think it's very much needed. We had some testimony from the fellow representing or speaking on behalf of rural health clinics and talking about the squeeze there. I'm unclear from the current language of the legislation whether clinics would be considered in these high-cost areas for some sort of fuel stipend or some sort of relief.
Well, we could see if we can get that issue addressed between now and our next meeting. Hopefully we can work on this and address the needs that are out there.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that. I think that would be, you know, we don't want to rock the boat too much or take on too many issues in this legislation. We want to keep it simple, want to keep it moving quickly. But if there is a way to help rural health clinics, I think there's absolutely a folder full of justification that we could have for why that would be just as important as helping some individuals with relief as well. So if there's a way to do it, I would hope we could.
Any other comments on this bill before we move on to the next one? Okay, we'll go ahead and set Senate Bill 115 aside for now, and we're going to move on to Senate Bill 116. Again, the intent here is to present the bill, get it on the table, have some initial questions, take public testimony, and then we'll set the bill aside for further review and work. And to present the bill today, we'll ask Senator Hoffman.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is the appropriation bill that would be utilized to fund the previous bill 115. At present, this is an appropriation for $5 million. I have been in contact with the governor's office staff and the governor's office to find out exactly how much may be needed. But at this time, this is the amount that we put into the legislation. We don't want to underfund it whatever is not spent would remain in the fund or be returned to the general fund. So simply, this is just the appropriation bill for the program.
Do we have any initial questions from the committee members? Fund source identification, is there any other fund source under consideration? Are we just looking at the general fund, or what are your research showed up there?
At this point, we're just looking at the general fund.
Okay. And we'll take a brief at ease. Back on the record, and thanks for patience in the delay. We're going to go back up to Dillingham to Melody Nybeck, and if you could identify yourself, who you represent, even though you were on here, and the other three people coming or have already testified on Senate Bill 115, I'd like you all to re-identify yourself and then speak to Senate Bill 116, please. Starting with Melody.
Thank you. My name is Melody Nybeck. I am the newly hired Tribal Energy Program Manager for BB&A. I did include Senate Bill 116 in my prior testimony. But just for clarification, BB&A both support Senate Bill 115 and Senate Bill 116. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And Norm Anderson, do you want to identify yourself again? And I see you're on the list, and if you have anything new on 116?
Again, this is Norman Anderson. I'm the Economic Development Program Manager at BB&A, and not anything really new, but just asking for recognition for the support for this. We know the money has to come from somewhere, but it impacts the people in the villages, in our villages, the Bristol Bay, and everyone north of us. So thank you very much for the time and the support, and thanks to our senator. Okay. Have a good day.
Okay, thank you. And we're going to go now to Anchorage. Reagan Mattingly.
Hi, thank you, Chair. This is Reagan Mattingly with the Alaska Primary Care Association, and I just simply want to urge the committee to consider health clinics when formulating the energy assistance program, and also that the Alaska Primary Care Association supports Senate Bill 116. Thank you.
Thank you, Reagan. How about Pat Luby, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Pat Luby. I'm the Advocacy Director for AARP in Alaska. AARP supports Senate Bill 116 to provide funding for this program. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. That concludes our out-of-town guests that want to testify. Anybody here? I have no sign-up list, so I see there are lots of people sitting in the audience. And we'll bring it back to committee. Committee, have any questions on this bill? Senator Hoffman, you have any closing statements before we set the bill aside?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you. We've got. We'll go ahead and set Senate Bill 116 aside for now. We'll move on to our third bill of the day, third and final bill. Again, we're going to hear the bill and take testimony from the sponsor and public testimony, and then we're going to have some questions, and we'll set this bill aside. Senate Bill 93. We have Senator Pascavan that's enthusiastically joined us as the sponsor. Senator Pascavan, I'd like to welcome you to Senate Finance. I think this is your first opportunity to bring a bill before your colleagues in Senate Finance, and I'm sure you'll do a fine job in enlightening us on what Bill 93 does. And if you can identify yourself and who you represent, and then walk us through the bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the Finance Committee. My name is Joe Pascvan. I'm the senator from Senate District E, Fairbanks and Fort Wainwright. And I'm speaking on Senate Bill 93, which is a municipal air quality property tax credit bill. And there are some communities in Alaska that have been designated as non-attainment areas for PM2.5 under the Federal Environmental Protection Agency standards. Based on the requirements of the Clean Air Act, the states and those impacted local governments have 3 years to develop attainment plans designed to bring air quality into compliance with federal air standards. Interior Alaska, because we have what is called an air inversion, have a problem when it does get cold and the heating requirements are at the highest. We have the development of a air inversion, and that traps the air particles, and that's what results in the violation of the 2.5 air standards. And Senate Bill 93 is needed as a first step to allow municipalities the latitude in developing tax credit programs to address the important public health and community compliance issues that result from these poor air quality standards, or the, not the standards, but the violation of those standards. Senate Bill 93 is designed to provide optional tools to the municipalities that they can use to create incentives for individuals to take actions to improve local air quality and to reduce fuel consumption. Senate Bill 93 expands the discretion of municipalities in a manner that allows those municipalities by ordinance to create programs that will offer property tax credits for actions that the local governing body determine will improve air quality. This bill requires that eligibility conditions and other criteria for the tax credits will be established by the ordinance. And specific examples that will help improve that are incentives to residents to convert from the old style wood stoves to EPA certified wood stoves. And the data shows that the EPA certified wood stoves significantly reduce the fine particulate emissions over the old style non-EPA stoves. There's also incentives to residents or commercial businesses to improve the energy efficiency of their property, and reduced fuel consumption will lead to reduced emissions from area heating or electrical generation. Incentives would be based on a calculated BTU savings. The third incentive is to convert from the carbon-based energy consumption to alternative energy generation. And this could involve tax credits for construction and use of solar array or wind turbine to power heat for residential or commercial facilities. And the purpose of Senate Bill 93 is to provide a full range of options to the local municipalities to address the air quality issues rather than just using the heavy hand of government to compel them. This is to provide voluntary incentives in behavior, and attached to this is a zero fiscal note.
Right, I took note of the zero fiscal note. We would expect, as a good colleague, all legislation brought before the committee from you from now on will match the zero fiscal note. we always look for those. We rarely see them. Senator Pascvan, is there any penalties that the North Star Borough may incur if they don't do some air quality cleanup from the EPA? Or what? Give us a rundown on what's behind the impetus of this, other than trying to just clean the air up.
Yes, the risk is that the borough is trying to, as this first step, induce voluntary compliance by the citizens. And then if ultimately we were to stay in non-attainment, then the federal government can come in and impose sanctions on the community. One of the immediate effects that we had is that there was thoughts of establishing an additional brigade of 5,000 striker members at the Fort Wainwright community. We scored high in really every category except for we were in non-attainment of the 2.5 standards, and we did not receive that 5,000 troop increase in Fort Wainwright. So on a local basis, we feel that We've already been, so to speak, impacted directly by the non-attainment under the 2.5 standard, and we think that that is the type of sanction that will continue as until we do come into compliance with the 2.5 EPA standard.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is it also reasonable to assume with that same situation that the BRAC hearings will obviously be considering, you know, in the future what takes place with military bases and that the ability to non-attainment will affect that, as well as the Federal Department of Transportation looks at transportation funding and has the ability to remove that funding if you do not, or some of it, I'm not sure the percentages and whatever, but they do have that ability to remove that money. So that also a concern for putting this legislation in?
Yes, very much so. It's not only the fact that we may have lost 5,000 troops at Fort Wainwright, but then when it comes to the potential of base closure in the years to come, that the non-attainment will be a large factor in that. So we want to very affirmatively show that we are providing to the local municipality the basis for them to make those decisions at the ground level to come into compliance with the air quality standards, so that we do not have these secondary effects of potentially closure of Eielson or closure of Fort Wainwright because we are in non-attainment of those EPA standards.
Senator Elton. A question?
Not a question, just kind of a statement to add on, and I appreciated your question because I think it's important, but I would just add on to the comments by the bill sponsor that there's not only the mega umbrella potential costs, and I think the discussion about the military was very important, but in my community, this bill potentially helps my community also. And one of the things that has happened as energy costs, especially the price of carbon-based energy, has gone up, homeowners are being forced out of cheaper energy sources, wood stoves, pellet stoves, and others, because of non-compliance. And it is not uncommon in my community for those kind of alternative energy sources to be shut down by the city because of air quality issues that bring the attention of the federal government. So there's the mega kind of impact that can happen to a community, but there's also the monetary impact that can happen to individuals in the community.
Okay, we're going to go to, didn't quite hear a question, but we'll go to, and the statement was fine, but we'll go to the off-net here in just a minute. Senator Huggins wants to make a statement.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Joe, the communities that are under PM 2.5 is Fairbanks, Juneau, and Anchorage. Is that accurate?
I'm not sure of all the communities that are in non-attainment, but I guess expanding, it certainly directly helps those communities that are in non-attainment, but then the language is broad enough in this statute to provide for a local government to provide tax credits just simply for energy efficiency of the existing structures, and also to provide a tax credit, for example, of conversion from a carbon-based fuel source to an alternative energy source. So it is not just to those communities that are in non-attainment. I think it provides a good social policy overall.
Right. So someone in Fairbanks, in this case, own multiple rental properties, they can take advantage of that in multiple properties, or is it solely for homeowners, or help me through that?
Yes, in other words, it's for residences and commercial businesses. And if you are a property taxpayer and the local municipality looks at who they want to benefit and how they want to benefit that community, whether through improving the air quality or just increasing energy efficiency of the businesses or the residents, they can say, we will give you $1,000 tax credit And they can do that not just for 1 year, they could do it over 2 or 3 years, for example. And we allow in this Senate Bill 93 the discretion of the municipalities to set the amount of tax credit and the period of time that they would provide that tax credit over.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One final follow-up, and just for clarity for the committee, as I recall, that Fairbanks has a disadvantage in this sense, that the military communities there are not exempted in the calculation. If you go to Anchorage, when the calculation is done, that both the Air Force Base and the Army installation, Fort Richardson, are exempted out of the calculation. Help me out.
I know that specifically that Fort Wainwright is included within the area that is monitored, and so it is not exempted. And obviously they are very close proximity neighbors to us in the city of Fairbanks, and so they are not exempted. That Fort Wainwright is specifically within the parameters of the federal zone that determines those 2.5 standards.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Pascavan, as you look at the zero fiscal note, it's going to cost somebody something if they're giving tax credits out there. Do you have any idea what it's going to cost the municipality, either the borough or the city, whoever gives the tax credit out, just for Fairbanks?
I think we have not done that I am aware of on the local level, but this is that first step to tell the municipalities that they're on the front lines of this problem, to use their best efforts to determine what will promote the quickest way to attainment of that 2.5 standard. So I think it's the intent of this is to be very broad and open-minded as far as leaving the local municipalities to best decide what they want to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions, we're going to jump to the off-net, go up to Fairbanks. James Connor, if you can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and speak to Senate Bill 93, please.
Thank you. This is James Connor. I'm the Fairbanks North Star Borough Air Quality Specialist, and I have a prepared statement, and I'd be happy to answer any questions after that. And I'd like to say that within the greater Fairbanks area, the fine particulate pollution fails to meet the EPA's National Ambient Air Quality Standard 20 to 30 times in winter. This health-based standard was changed in September 2006 based on the EPA's Science Advisory Committee recommendations, lowering the allowable concentration of fine particulates from 65 to 35 micrograms per cubic meter for a 24-hour average. There's also an annual standard that was left at 15 micrograms per cubic meter. These recommendations from the Science Advisory Committee were based on many extensive health studies over a 5-year period, and these studies indicated that even short-term exposure to fine particulates could result in new cases of respiratory and heart disease. I mention these recommendations in order to stress that it really is a public health issue in addition to the economic issue. The fine particulate pollution we experience is really exacerbated in the winter because the surrounding hills, the stagnant airflow, and the temperature inversions that were mentioned earlier trap those particulates that we produce locally. And mostly, these are coming mostly from transportation and space heating. During the summer, space heating demands reduced, and what pollution we do produce is cleared out of the area with the wind and the rain before it can really accumulate to dangerous levels, except when we experience wildland fires. And we have experienced concentrations above 1,000 micrograms per cubic meter in the summer due to wildland fires, but we're permitted to exclude these natural emissions from our 24-hour and annual averages, those calculations, because they're not man-made. Unless we start the fires as a resource management strategy, in that case, they're not allowed to be excluded. In Fairbanks, we depend on the clean summer air to average with the polluted air in the winter to stay below the annual limit of 15 micrograms per cubic meter. That's an annual average. And this is one reason why it's important to reduce the number and the severity of the winter exceedances, because at this time, we only have to control fine particulate emissions in the winter. And if we violate the annual average, we need to extend those winter controls into the summer. And again, this would affect construction projects and again, wildland resource management throughout the year. As mentioned before, this committee actually, this wasn't really mentioned before, the timeline associated with the EPA action precedes 90 days from the publication of the non-attainment designation in the Federal Register. And that starts the clock, and we then have 3 years, as Senator Pascman said, to submit to the EPA an air quality control plan demonstrating how we'll attain the standard within 5 years. And that's the total time, 5 years from that same designation date, we're supposed to obtain that, the National Ambient Air Quality Standard. So once that Federal Register designation is published, all new construction projects in the designated non-attainment area are then required to demonstrate conformity with an approved air quality control plan, the plan that we have 3 years to submit and requires an EPA approval. Since this plan takes time to create, there will likely be a period where conformity cannot be met and economic development of the area can be affected. However, there is a 1 year grace period that also starts with that Federal Register designation date, where new projects don't have to meet conformity or demonstrate conformity. And if the state fails to submit a plan or to show progress on cleaning up the air, the EPA can begin to withhold federal funds, first to the designated area and eventually to the entire state. An area or a county is allowed one exceedance of this health standard per year, and the second exceedance is considered a violation that can bring a non-attainment designation to the area. And the number and severity of the exceedances after that just simply further jeopardizes public health and the economic environment for development and the difficulty to eventually meet the standard. Senate Bill 93 gives the Fairbanks North Star Borough a means to provide a voluntary incentive program to borough residents and businesses to improve the efficiency of their homes and businesses in a manner that will improve air quality and energy efficiency. And as the high cost of energy has driven residents to lower costing fuels such as wood and coal, this bill will help further reduce that cost and higher emissions that come from using these cheaper fuels.
Could I get you to sum up, please, Mr. Conner?
Yes, I'm finished. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Also in Fairbanks is Nadine Winters. If you can identify yourself and who you represent, and if you have...
I'm Nadine Winters. I'm the I'm on the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly. And I would just like to say briefly that Fairbanks, as you've heard, Fairbanks has an air quality issue. We're looking for a way to protect the health of our residents and to look after our long-term economic viability. This bill gives us a tool, I think, to meet both of those needs and to meet both of those needs and to try and stay out of the sort of regulatory abyss of the Federal Clean Air Act. And I think I would just say that, and we urge your support of this bill.
Great. Thank you. That concludes our off-net. Do we have any other final questions? Is there any potential federal penalty, Senator Pascavan, if the legislature doesn't act on this?
Well, I think
against
that
the state?
The penalty would be upon any of the communities that are in non-attainment, and as Senator Thomas pointed out, whether that's through the various programs of the federal government that either non-awarding of base troop increases or withdrawal of federal funds for the highways, it would be a direct impact on the communities that are in non-attainment. And so I think this is the best alternative for the state's policy to say, let's let the local municipalities start now as this first step to get into attainment.
Okay. Do we have any other questions for bill sponsor before we set this bill aside? There was nobody in the audience on sign up for to testify, so we'll go ahead and So we'll go ahead and set this bill aside, and then we'll pick it up at a later date.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the Senate Finance Committee.
Tomorrow, February 24th, we'll have no meeting. Our next scheduled meeting is Wednesday, February 25th, at 9 a.m. We're going to bring up three bills: Senate Bill 45, Veterans Cemetery Fund License Plates; Senate Bill 13, Medical Assistance Eligibility; and Senate Bill 87, Medical Assistance Eligibility. They're two separate bills; it's very similar in title. So we'll bring those up for an introduction. And if there's anything else from the members, this meeting's adjourned.